DipYourCar.com has become world famous for the first removable peelable automotive paint. What's known as dipping is the fastest growing trend in the automotive industry. It finally gives the average person total control over the appearance of their vehicle. Anything from your wheels, the emblems, the trim, or even the whole car can be dipped. Then you peel it back at any time and it restores the original color of your car. It's very affordable. You can change the wheel color for about $40. You can dip your entire car for a few hundred dollars. Almost 500,000 people in just 3 years have dipped their cars in countries all over the world. It's going to protect your car's original paint from the elements, debris, rocks, whatever could come floating up and attack the coating of your car. It can be applied by anyone with any skill level. Very durable and tough when properly applied. A dip can last 3 to 4 years if you want it to. You can peel it back anytime you want. There's hundreds of colors to choose from. Matte, satin, high gloss finishes, they're all available. All the materials and the equipment needed is available in the kits. Step-by-step tutorial videos are available for free right now on YouTube. You can go to YouTube right now, say youtube.com/dipyourcar, and you can check this out. All the products can be found at the website, www.dipyourcar.com. You're probably already seeing Dip Your Car's products right now. It's on everything, from a teenager's coupe to a soccer mom's minivan to high-end exotic cars. Simply spray it on, leave it as long as you like, and peel it off whenever you're done, and you will have the stock color of your car sitting there waiting for you. www.dipyourcar.com.
He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen, and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on podcast1.com. And for that, you're welcome.
Well, happy Wednesday, everybody. Your day is about to get a little bit better. I'm in a very good mood. My wife belongs to a book club on Amazon. I don't totally know how that works. She goes to Amazon, they send her books. She's got me reading one now called The Angel Box, written by Yana Hansen Smith. Let me sound this out. Yana Hansen Smith, called The Angel Box. It's a very good book, and it's just putting me in a good mood. And it's not even a feel-good book. I don't know why I'm in such a good mood. I guess because it's a fun read. Listen, today's show, we're going to have Ed O'Neill on. And for most of you, much like me, it would be easier if I told you his screen name, which was Al Bundy on Married with Children. He's Al Bundy. Now he's part of the number one sitcom on television right now called Modern Family, but I didn't grow up on Modern Family. I check it out every now and then, but I grew up on Married with Children, but I still watch it. It's syndicated. I still catch the reruns. It just brings back good memories. Ed O'Neill is a huge fight fan, predominantly Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He's actually trains with the Gracies, and I believe he's a black belt. I think that's right. I'll make sure that I ask him in the show what his actual belt ranking is. There was also a rumor going around social media that he had challenged or offered at least to be CM Punk's first opponent in the UFC. I don't know if that's a serious challenge or he's having a little fun with it, but my point is he's a huge fight fan. Now, listen, I am down at a radio station. That's where we record these podcasts from. A lot of guys that do podcasts do them from home, have a little home studio like Stone Cold Steve Austin's got, but I drive into Portland, and I prefer it. It makes me feel like I'm going to work. I get up, I go to the coffee shop, I do the whole bit, and I feel like I'm coming into work. When I got here, it's a big radio station down here. We've got some major talent. I just ran into a guy named John Canzano, who's a local sports talent here out of Portland. And as a matter of fact, we're kind of neighbors. We're both from the same city of West Lynn. We hang out at the same restaurants. West Lynn's a pretty small town, so we've only got a handful of restaurants. So at any rate, a quick story here. I was on Canzano's show. He's got a local AM show here in Portland. I was on it a number of years ago. And I'm doing a show, and everything's going fine. And out of nowhere, he says, so Chael, are you still in trouble for fraud? And we're live. And I've never been in trouble for any kind of fraud, and there's no way to unfry that egg. Once he says that, you can't undo it. There's in broadcast or in TV or politics, however, there's a thing called "Do you still beat your wife?" It's a question. Do you still beat your wife? Question. And the thought behind that is if I come out and I'm interviewing you, you're a guest on my show, and I say, "So do you still beat your wife?" And you pause and you go, I've never beaten my wife. Where did that come from? I go, oh man, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. I don't know why I asked you that. I got some bad notes here. Whatever the case is, it's already out there. It's very hard for you to put the toothpaste back in the tube once that question gets asked. So I'm furious. I'm furious that he said it. And, you know, I tell him that. I said, you still beat your wife? You know, I go right in this whole routine. And now he's on the defensive, and the call ends, and then he continues his show about, oh, Chael, what a jerk. He hangs up the phone, blah, blah, blah. I'm going, I'm the jerk. You just asked me live something about fraud. And so we live in the same hometown, and he ends up, you know, he's emailing me repeatedly wanting to know what the big deal is. And he doesn't care. This was ratings for his show. And so we end up agreeing to go meet. And he's you know, he wants to talk. He wants to know why I'm mad. Well, I had been in a jam over something called money laundering. And there was a major relevance here. And I sat him down and I explained it to him. And I said, John, I know what fraud is, and so do all the listeners, and so do you. Fraud is being dishonest, and it's lying, and we all know the definition, and it's slimy and dirty. And he said, yeah, but you had this thing with money laundering going on. And I go, yeah, but that's not what you said. And he goes, well, what's the difference? We're splitting hairs. I said, no, we're not. I said, John, tell me right now. You're a smart guy. Tell me. What does money laundering mean? Right now, tell me. We couldn't do it. I said, of course you can't do it. I don't know what it means either, neither do any of the listeners. Outside of the movies, no one's ever heard of money laundering. I end up in this jam over a crime that nobody knows exists. That's a tremendous difference from him saying fraud. It's like, look, neither one of these are great, but you got to still keep it within the context. This is your job. And I'm sitting across from him, and this is a very condescending argument that I made to him. And I knew it was being condescending, but the argument is still solid. I said, listen, John, I could get on Jim Rome right now. I have Jim Rome in my Rolodex. I could pick up this phone. I held up my cell phone. I said, I could call Jim Rome right now and be on the biggest sports show in America. I came on your little show in Portland purely as a fan. That doesn't help me. I'm not going to sell any pay-per-views for going and talking to John Canzano on an AM station. And his ego was of such, I could tell I wasn't getting through to him. You know, he was looking at me like, yeah, Jim Rome, John Canzano, same thing. So the meeting, and I made a really good point. You know what I'm saying? You know, neither one's great, but you still really miscategorize this, and it was wrong. It was really wrong what you did. So he agrees with me. He agrees, yeah, I peed down my leg on that one, I think was the expression he used. So he says, all right, listen. I understand, and I just want you to know you're good with me. And he reaches out, and we shake hands, and we get up and leave. And I go, okay, thanks. So we leave. And then when I get in my car, I'm like, man, what kind of a mind trick was that? He calls this meeting so he can ask for my forgiveness. And by the end of the meeting, he's letting me know I'm okay with him. And I'm like, this guy's a genius. I don't know how he just pulled that off. This is 3 years ago. I'm telling you, I really like the guy. We get along great now. I mean, he's one studio over right now. I'm not telling the story as a bash John Canzano as much as it was just a funny story. I thought you guys would appreciate it, and I'm staring at the guy through the glass window right now. But yeah, old John tricked me. He ended up getting over on Chael twice. How do you like that? So, with that said, why don't we do this? Why don't we throw to a quick commercial that I know you guys are going to stick around and buy the products. And we will come back with Al Bundy, which I'm going to make sure I don't call him. Ed O'Neill coming up. I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Ever wonder why razors are so expensive? Maybe it's because razors are loaded up with so much shave technology. Vibrating handle, 19 blades, a laser pointer, a compass, a thermometer, and a back scratcher. I don't need any of that, and it's not fair to make me pay for it. I was sick of paying out the nose to get a great shave. That's why I made the switch to DollarShaveClub.com. DollarShaveClub.com delivers amazing razors and grooming supplies for a couple of bucks. It's simple and it's smart. It takes 2 minutes to get going, and then you never have to worry about razors again. DollarShaveClub.com gives you a free handle, and then they send you replacement blades for just a few bucks. You can get blades delivered every month or every other month. Your blades arrive like clockwork. Stop squeezing weeks out of shaves with that dull razor and start treating yourself to a fresh blade every time you choose. Believe me when I tell you, the DollarShaveClub.com blades are fantastic. I've never had a closer shave. Upgrade to the smarter way to shave. Get your shave gear where I get mine, DollarShaveClub.com/Chael. Save time, save money. DollarShaveClub.com/Chael. That's DollarShaveClub.com/Chael.
This is Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
All right, we're back to Your Welcome, as promised and delivered. Ed O'Neill. Ed, what's going on, buddy?
Chael.
Man, I'm so happy to be talking to you. Where are you at right now? You're in California?
You know what? This has really worked out great because we're working. I'm doing Modern Family today. We're shooting today. We're in Brentwood at the set, our outdoor location in Brentwood for my character's home. And, you know, I timed it like, you know, I thought we'd break for lunch at 1, and, you know, a lot of times it doesn't work out that way, but it did.
Well, I'm happy it did, man. I'm happy you made the whole crew wait for old Chael. You made the right decision.
How you doing, my boy?
You know what? I've never been better. I was out at the last Metamorphosis. As a matter of fact, 2 Metamorphoses ago, I wrestled in it, and I was hoping to see you. I thought you might be commentating it again, and you weren't out there. You missed it.
You know, I'll tell you a funny thing. First of all, I meant to come, and then something came up with one of my daughters, and I couldn't. I was at the last one. I was looking for you, but I didn't see it, that one.
But okay, that was Henzo.
I don't think they want me to commentate anymore because I had never commentated before. That was my first time. And, you know, I can't, if a fight is sort of boring, I'm not going to say anything. You know, like, I'm not going to try to make it more than what it is, you know.
Sure.
And they were telling me from the booth, talk it up, say, you know, like, there's nothing going on, you know, in certain matches. So I don't think they were too happy with it.
You know what? There's no other way around that. I was going to commentate for them, and I love that product. You know, they put on such a great arena and atmosphere for the sport of grappling. And largely jiu-jitsu, I think that's fair to say, but just grappling, we'll call it that. However, they do have a problem, and the problem is the 20-minute atmosphere when you don't have a point system. You know, fans understand points.
Yes.
But
yes.
You got to kind of be in the gym yourself, a guy like you or I, someone that's involved in the sport to see the intricacies going on, and it's
well,
tough.
You know, the other thing, too, even though they tell these guys, you know, that there's no point system, a lot of these guys are so, it's so ingrained in their DNA, you know, that when they get out there and they get cross-eyed, they can't help it. They, you know, especially if they're evenly matched, there is a sort of mutual agreement almost to just sort of, I don't want to say stall, but, you know, there are those times when it's like, okay, you know, guys, come on, let's get going. But, you know, even though there's no points, they still know there's a perception of who won at the end of the day. So I think sometimes that enters into it, you know? By the way, I enjoy it. I really enjoy it.
You know, that always has been. In the original Hoist Gracie days, there was no rounds. You kind of needed to work, wear a guy down. It was largely based on that and strategy. And until Metamorphosis came around, the biggest platform for this sport there was is Abu Dhabi.
And, right.
And Abu Dhabi has a point system. So to what you were saying a moment ago, that guys almost have this unwritten agreement where they do know the Abu Dhabi scoring system, and amongst them at least, they are keeping score.
That's right.
And so it makes it a little bit tough. But, you know, Ed, people will say that boxing has a feeling out period. And it's not true. There is no feeling out period in boxing. If you ever go watch amateur boxing, they don't go burn two or three rounds. They've only got three rounds. They're not worried about conditioning. And they go out and they get after it. And amateur boxing is very fun to watch. In professional boxing, when it's a 12-round, 36-minute atmosphere, athletes can't do that. The human body's not made to do that. So both guys go out. And they kind of burn up three, four, five rounds before they get after it. And the commentators cover that by going, well, they're feeling each other out. No, they're not. No, they're not. Your rules of boxing are too extreme.
But in the old days, you know, like in the 50s and 60s and before that, the 30s, a lot of those guys, you know, we're talking about, you can name a bunch of them, Robinson and LaMotta and all those guys. Those guys, you know, what they would do is in the early rounds, they would kind of test the waters. Like, they would say, is he going for feints? Can I walk him into a punch? Can I, what's his tendency? So there's kind of like in the mind, a computer going, what can I do to this guy? And then once they kind of, they used to call it figure him out, then they go to work. But before that, they have to kind of, they don't want to walk into anything stupid, you know?
Sure.
So that was also happening a lot.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I can tell you, I came from an amateur wrestling background, you know, just what you'd see in your local high school. And we were in, I mean, it was grueling. We would train so hard and we would be so tired in these matches. And the matches are only 6 minutes long. And when you try to, it's so long. It's 6 minutes is so long when you're out there. And we have stalling rules. You can't back up. You must be active. You can lose points and be penalized. But in a Metamora situation where there is no stalling, there is no back up, that 20 minutes slows down a lot. And it can create a problem. And Halleck's the first to admit it. Halleck's like, man, I want finishes. I want submissions. I want guys in and out of there. I want to roll the interviews, have the walkouts. That's the real excitement. And,
You know, it's a funny thing, too, because there's something happening now. You know, since the MMA has become so popular, the UFC is so popular. And, of course, out of necessity, the rules have changed. There's no more, you know, there's weight classes. There's time limits. There's so many things now, those big gloves they use. You can punch a hole through a door with those gloves. But it's difficult to choke with those gloves on. There's a lot of problems for the grapplers because it's so stand-up oriented now. But the thing is, and a lot of people forget this, that Elio Gracie was 140 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
His whole philosophy was not to, you know, overpower anybody. It was basically don't get killed out there. And by a bigger, stronger, tougher, maybe younger, more athletic guy, his whole philosophy was, what can I do from being hurt badly and take my time? So he used to have the phrase, I need to cook the guy. I need to, you know, much like Muhammad Ali did in the early rounds, you know, he would get a guy thinking that nothing was going to come back, and he would loaf and run and move and clown, and then when the guy was frustrated, he would take advantage. But Elio was a guy who just said, you know, I can't go out and get right on top of a guy and dominate him. I can't do it. So in MMA now, I mean, most everybody knows at least some jiu-jitsu. A lot of guys come from wrestling backgrounds. And it's hard to submit a guy who looks up at the clock and says, I got a minute. All I got to do is keep my elbows tight. You know, I mean, it happens. But for the most part, many and many of the fights now, as I see, you have wrestlers who don't want to wrestle, and you have jiu-jitsu players who don't want to do jiu-jitsu. And the Gracie system, basically, the whole secret is the guard. If you pull guard in UFC, you're losing the fight.
Yeah, for sure. On the judges, you mean? Yeah, absolutely you are.
You're losing the fight. And so you've got guys that, you know, say you come out, now you've come out of a pure wrestling background, right?
Mm-hmm.
And your whole career was wrestling. Well, when you got into the MMA, I'm sure they told you, look, Chael, you have to get more dimensional. You have to learn some kind of striking and kicking. Well, that's fine. But how long did it take you to become a world-class wrestler?
Yeah, a lifetime.
It takes you a lifetime to learn how to become a world-class boxer or puncher or kicker. And so what happens to so many of these guys, Jill, as I see it, they learn just enough boxing to get knocked out, you know, or to get lucky with a punch.
Yep.
You know, they've got to sort of, it looks like a schoolyard fight sometimes when they throw punches. Now, some of them, I noticed lately, have gotten a lot better. Some of them, you know, like Jose Aldo is more of a natural kicker and also can punch also. I love the Irish kid. You know, that kid can hit hard.
Yeah, McGregor.
McGregor is. He's an exciting guy. But for the most part, most of these guys are because of the nature of what it's a spectacle now. And they have to bring ass to get ass. And that's why a lot of times it's whoever hurts who first is going to win the fight.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And, you know, there is an expression that 80% of fights end up on the ground, but 100% of them start standing up.
That's right. And in UFC, they stand you back up at the first opportunity that they get.
Yeah, they do.
Because, and by the way, I understand it. You can't have a fight anymore where a Hoist Gracie has got a wrestler locked up in a, you know, basically a triangle after 20 minutes of just rolling around. No one knows what's going on. You know, that wouldn't work either.
Sure. You're right. And if you're a promoter, yeah, it's not what you want. You have to bring that excitement.
That's right.
Now, what is
by the way, I still love them. I still watch them. I get a big kick out of it.
What is your history with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
Well, you know, it's really funny. I didn't start doing it until I was 40. Because I came from a football background, a little bit of boxing, you know, just as a kid, amateur stuff. And baseball, just a normal American Midwest stuff. Actually, I'm from Youngstown, Ohio, which is right on the PA line. But it was a steel mill town. And, you know, kids just played those sports. So I went through the collegiate football program. I had a tryout with the Pittsburgh Steelers in 69 as an outside linebacker. Chuck Knoll's first year. Did not make the team and ended up sort of drifting around, didn't know what I was going to do. And finally found acting. A long story short, I'm in L.A. I meet a guy named John Milius, who was he wrote Apocalypse Now and quite a few other movies. And he and his son were taking jiu-jitsu from Torian Gracie down in Torrance. And he talked me into going down there because I had no interest in it. I said, this is like Bruce Lee, so with the pajamas and, do they yell and scream? And
right.
I didn't know anything about it. I knew a little bit about wrestling because I had tried wrestling at Ohio University. I used to work out with some of the team guys in the off season just to get in shape. And really, I didn't know a thing about it. You know, I was just, I just liked it. But I was, I was an amateur completely. But I went down there and I met Horian, and he gave me that basic, thing where he got on top of me and I couldn't get him off. And then I got on him and he got me off in 2 seconds. And I said, well, damn, I got to learn this, and I just started going and taking classes. And I've been, doing it as a hobby, really, for the last 28 years.
And you worked your way all the way to a black belt. Is that correct?
Yes, I did.
That's awesome. Congrats, man.
I got a black belt about 6 years ago. And I couldn't believe I got it. I mean, I just, for me, I didn't really aspire to that. Although, it was in my mind, it would be nice. But I thought, at my age, I'm just glad to be getting in the door and working out with these guys. It was so much fun. And I was very, very proud of that because I couldn't believe I got one.
You should be proud. I've been at it for some time. I'm at a purple belt. And it's hard to get promoted, man, particularly in the Gracie system.
Listen, because, of course, now look, I was older. I was only going, once or twice a week. It took me 16 years to get mine. So I remember when they gave me the black belt, they wanted me to say something to the guys. And I said, 16 years. This must come naturally to me.
That's beautiful.
You know what? I tell you the truth. All my stuff, most of all my classes were with, Horian. I probably had 10 privates with Elio, which was fabulous. And I've had, I've trained with Hoyler. I've trained with, the only one I never trained with was Hickson, which is the one I really wanted to,
Sure.
But he was sort of, he wasn't around those guys at that point in time. He had his own thing going. But, I trained with, Henner, Theodon, Halleck, all of them. And it's just, you know, and they take it easy on me. You know, I mean, they don't hurt me, and it's just great. I just loved it.
Now, I hear that Henner Gracie is greatly underrated. I heard that, at least by practice room standards, that guy is amazing. Can you confirm that?
Chael, he is beyond, I mean, and so is his brother, you know. The two of them, I mean, you know, here's the thing about them. They grew up together very close in age. So the older brother was always dominant in the role, you know, because he was older and stronger. And so as a result, I think Tiron's top game is amazing and Henner's bottom game is amazing because, you know, he was always on the bottom and Henner was always on the top. But Henner has phenomenal footlocks and leg locks. And, you know, I mean, he's like, I mean, he can catch all, you know, his game from the bottom is scary. And, you know, he's 6'5".
Sure.
And, I mean, they're rangy and they're strong and they have endurance for days. And they, listen, they've been doing it since they were two. And, you know, it's just, they're really amazing.
I've heard that. And I've never got to be in the room with Henner, but a guy that coached me, Mark Munoz, is.
Sure, I know Mark.
Mark just says, man, the guy's incredible. And Mark's, this is a national champion, world-class wrestler, top 10 fighter. Something. And Mark's like, man, I can't. This guy's incredible.
The first time I saw Mark and I met Mark, they were in the private room. And they let me stay and watch the training. Because Mark was training for, you know, a fight. And he was rolling with Henner. And I, the first 3 minutes, I thought, man, this Munoz is a beast. I mean, you know how he trains hard.
Yeah.
And he's physical, and they were going. And after like 3 or 4 minutes, Henner was basically talking to him, like, the leg. Move the leg there. Put the elbow to the right. There you go. Okay. Now, underneath. You know, he was like, he was just, I don't want to say he was playing with him, but in a sense, he was, you know. And, you know, and then he would tap him a couple of times, you know. But you understand it more than anybody. It was a training situation. They were helping, you know, he was helping them out.
Sure.
So, yeah. But by the way, they're great guys. They're real gentlemen. They're wonderful guys. You would love them.
You know, and I love in jiu-jitsu, or go back to a Metamora situation, I love a mismatch. And in boxing or MMA, you don't, but in jiu-jitsu, when you get these two even guys, it ends up with a lot of nothing happening, a lot of waiting. But when you have that mismatch, when you have a guy that does have the ability to do the sweeps and the locks and go for the catches and the submissions, man, it's a thing of beauty. It's really, my it appreciation for it has really grown as of,
you know,
recent.
I don't know if this is to the point, but I can remember having a couple classes with the old man. And I remember once I tried to, he was mounted, and I tried to put my left hand under his leg, under his knee to kind of sweep him. And when I put my left arm under his leg, he slapped me. I mean, not that hard. Well, it was actually kind of hard. He just popped me on the cheek, and he looked at me and he laughed and he said, "You know, in the street, it'll be the fist will be closed."
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't. And his whole thing was, if you can be punched, then that move is no good. And that's what, he'd go crazy with those 50-50 guards and stuff they're doing today. Because, you know, you can hit the guy, you can punch him right in the face.
Sure.
You know? So his whole thing was, how does this apply, you know, in the street if someone's trying to hurt you?
And that's a hard thing to get some of those top-level guys to admit. I'm really impressed that he did, because he's right. And a lot of jiu-jitsu guys, you know, including Hodger, will say, look, everything I've learned my whole life, I only get to apply about two to three things when I'm in an actual fight. But I appreciate that. You know, that was the Bruce Lee philosophy. You learn all these things, but you only take away what actually would work.
That's right.
I appreciate that. That's that you're saying that.
And I think that was part of the idea why the old man didn't really, he didn't really like leg locks that much, because he said, I'm too little to try to catch a big guy in a leg lock. You know, and the other thing he used to say was, anything that is hard, if it's hard, it's not going to work. You know, it's got to be easy. And for him, everything was leverage.
Sure.
And he used a lot of leverage because, of course, he wasn't a really strong guy, you know. Although he did have very strong chokes. He had big wrists. and he would catch you in sneaky chokes, and you would feel it like it was like a vice.
Yeah, you know, I love that philosophy, though, that it's got to come easy. And there is two schools of thought. The one school is if something doesn't work, you do it again and you do it harder. And you do it harder till it works. And the other school is if you can't fix it, forget it. There's enough moves out there. Just keep going through them until you find the ones that come natural.
You know, I remember the old man told me one time, he said, if I drop you in the middle of the ocean from a helicopter and I tell you I'm coming back in a half an hour, what are you going to do? You're going to dog paddle till I come back. If I drop you and say, I'm not coming back, goodbye, and fly away, you start to swim. So he said, in the real fight, you have to be more judicious with your energy. Because if you don't finish the guy right away, and he's still there, and you start to get tired, you're in trouble.
Yep.
So you have to conserve for your life the energy.
Yeah.
You know?
Whereas
in an MMA fight, you've got 3 rounds of 5 minutes, and you got to get that guy right away. Otherwise, you're going to lose the fight.
That's right.
And so it's a different animal, isn't it, Jeff?
Yeah, and I would say that's 90% of it. I would say 90% of the sport is just getting who can save energy and get the other guy tired.
And I've seen so many times. In fact, I saw it in the fight the other night when the Ben Henderson was fighting that big guy.
Yep, Thatch.
I had never seen Thatch before, but in that fight, and you'll remember, when Ben had his back late in the fight, the guy was tired, but yet he was safe. But he looked at the clock, and he said, man, I got a minute 22 to go. I've got to make something happen. He rolled right into the choke. You know, had he stayed where he was, he wouldn't have been choked, but he would have lost the fight.
Yeah, and that Ben Henderson, man, he's one of the best to have ever done it. He's got two wins over Edgar.
His coach, John and I used to roll. John used to train me at the old Gracie Academy, in Torrance.
And this John is his jiu-jitsu coach or his overall?
No, John Crouch is his what would you call him, his manager.
Yeah, I know John Crouch. Okay, I got you now.
Well, John and I used to train together all the time. John's a very good friend of mine. John's a good guy. And Ben is a very, very good, he's a good jiu-jitsu guy. He's a very smart fighter.
Yeah, he is. He absolutely is. Now, does John also suck on the toothpick during the match? Have you caught that Ben Henderson does that?
I don't know if John does. I don't think he does. It would surprise me if he did the same thing.
I worked out with Ben Henderson a number of times. We were working together at Fox, and in between we'd go and get workouts. And, Ed, I swear to goodness, that sucker chewed on the toothpick even during our practice sessions. And he says, man, I don't do this for marketing. He goes, I don't do it to be funny or arrogant or anything else. He said, I've just always done it. I've always kind of needed a little bit of a distraction. And he chewed that thing. It didn't matter if we were lifting weights. He had that damn toothpick in his mouth.
Well, you know, this goes back to way, way back. And I remember, and I don't know if you ever knew this. Remember the great fighter Jack Dempsey?
Of course.
Well, when Jack Dempsey would fight, when the fight started, many of his opponents would say he was singing a little song. And he did that all the time. There was a little song. I actually tried to find out what that song was.
I would love to know.
I was not successful.
Oh.
I actually met Dempsey in 1980. I was doing a play about a boxer on Broadway, and he came with his wife. He was about 82 years old. I'll show you, or I'll send you the picture of me and Dempsey. I've got it. It was so thrilling, you know, to talk to him. And I didn't know that at that time, that he used to sing a little song. And Duran used to make bird-like noises when he fought. like chirping, little like South American bird sounds.
Right.
I think it's sort of like a meditation, you know, where it calms them and it just gets, I don't know, but several of these guys that I knew do that sort of thing.
Now, you are from Youngstown, Ohio, and a lot of people don't know, but Youngstown is as vicious, as dirty, at least when you talk of the politics, as anywhere in the world. You put it against Chicago or New Orleans or anything, Youngstown, Ohio is a rough place. And there was a rough boxer to come out of there named Kelly Pavlik. Did you ever cross paths with him?
I know Kelly, and I know Boom Boom Mancini. Boom Boom's from Youngstown.
Okay, I didn't know that. How is Pavlik? Is he a good guy?
He's a great guy. You know, unfortunately, I think Kelly is having you know, he's had some problems the last few years, which, you know, I'm not talking out of school. Everybody knows it. He's had a little trouble with the booze, you know. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, I think that's what eventually made him, you know, retire, because he's got a real problem with it. Now, I haven't talked to him in a while, and, you know, I'm hoping that he's doing a lot better. A lot of good boxers came out of Youngstown in that area.
I didn't actually know Kelly retired. He's officially done. He hasn't been in the ring in a little bit? Okay.
No, he's retired. And Ray Mancini came out of there, and there was a lot of great fighters. Tony Gennaro, who was featured in the Raging Bull. You know, he fought Jake LaMotta. Tony Gennaro, a guy named Tommy Bell. Great, great welterweight. You know, and of course, Pittsburgh. You know, Pittsburgh had Harry Greb, Fritzy Zivic. Oh, God, so many great fighters out of Pittsburgh. You know, it goes on and on. But so it's all those steel mills, you know, they sort of, you know, create guys like that, you know?
Right.
Tony Zale, really tough guys.
Boxing is a rare thing. Like, I love it, and I have a great appreciation for it. But here's the reality. If I want to be top 10 boxer in the world, all I got to do is go sign up, because there aren't 10 other guys boxing.
There's just not.
I mean, most of the listeners listen to this, right? They'll kind of roll their eyes when I say that, but let me challenge the listeners. Name a boxing gym that you know of. Name one boxing gym you've ever passed.
Yeah, it's all gone now. Now listen, I'll give you an example. Now I'm going to cite a record, and if you look it up in Ring Boxing, I'm going to be wrong, but I'm going to be close. Okay. You take a guy like the Executioner, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's 49 years old, right?
Bernard Hopkins.
Bernard Hopkins. Take Bernard Hopkins, he's a middleweight, in his prime, let's say 26 years old. His record, and I'm going to be wrong, but I'm going to guess, 26-1-2 with 18 knockouts. 26 years old. He fights Sugar Ray Robinson, same age, 26 years old. Robinson's record at the age of 26, 91-1 with 74 knockouts, fighting the best fighters who ever lived. Who's going to win that fight? It's like fighting a child.
Sure.
So if you're going to talk about Bernard Hopkins as one of the all-time greats, you simply cannot do it. I could name you 50 fighters that never won a title who would have beaten him easily.
I think that's right. I think I totally agree with that. But it is, man. Boxing's a rare thing. And even when you see these professional cards, you see a Mayweather card, you know, some of these biggest fights, if you look a little closer, man, you got two gyms fighting one another. You got Mayweather's gym fighting, you know, the Kronk gym or whatever it might be. There's just not enough pool out there.
And some of your guys there write these. If you write and remember the name Charlie Burley.
Oh, yeah. I know Charlie Burley, of course.
Okay. You can YouTube him fighting anybody that you'll see him box. Or even a guy named Georgie Benton, who became a great trainer later on, his fight with, like, Reuben Carter. When you watch these guys in action, all you got to do is look at the tapes. You're going to have to say to yourself, if you're honest, you're going to say, "We don't see that kind of boxing anymore anywhere. It's gone."
Sure.
It's gone. Those guys knew more. They forgot more than these kids. But there's no amateur program. In the 40s, there was 10,000 professional boxing licenses issued in the state of New York. There's not 10,000 in the country today.
No, no way. Not even amateur included. No way.
So if I say to you, Chael, that Floyd Mayweather and Pacquiao are great athletes, which I'm happy to say, because they are, they're not great fighters. Why? They can't be. They won't fight anybody.
Sure.
There's nobody to make them great. What, if Mayweather sits in Vegas and drives a Bentley and has his fun with his friends, and he fights once or twice a year, hand-picked opponents.
Yeah, by him.
You can't become a great fighter doing that.
You absolutely can't. And, you know, and when history is written, unless you're talking to guys like you and I that actually follow it, when history's written amongst popular people and you go, hey, who's the best boxer ever? All they do is they search their memory bank and think, well, who's the most famous? Whoever I've heard of the most is the best. But, man, that's just not even
case. I make a simple statement that Sugar Ray Leonard would have knocked Mayweather out with no problem.
Oh, I love that argument. I make that argument all the time. For me, Sugar Ray's the man.
Tommy Hearns would have destroyed him. Why? First of all, he couldn't hurt Hearns. And the length, Duran knocks him out. in this, you know, I mean, all these guys, there's so many guys would have beaten him. But again, I don't have to name those guys. I'd give you 50 guys who never won a title would have beat him.
All right, Ed, I will see your
father or uncle could have beat him.
I will see your Charlie Burley, and I will raise you a Jack Johnson. Do you remember Jack Johnson?
Well, you mean the great heavyweight.
Jack Johnson was so bad. He was beating up these white guys at the wrong time. The Ku Klux Klan came out, and they threatened him. They said, if you win this fight, we're going to kill some black people. And Jack Johnson said publicly, you go ahead and kill my black brothers. I'm going to knock this white man out. And then he did.
Well, Johnson was one of the great fighters. There's no question. Hey, I'll give you, how about Sam Langford?
Sure, absolutely. Now, when you talk about Sugar Ray Leonard and you talk about Hearns and Duran, and of course, we're leaving out Hagler, you know, the true four horsemen. My father insists, on his deathbed, he would insist, if you stuck all those boxers in an alley, no ring, no ropes, no ring, you stick them all in an alley, Roberto Duran's going to be the one to come walking out. Is my dad right? And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to throw to a commercial break. It looks like I lost Ed. He's out there in some podunk town called L.A. where he's got a bad phone signal. I will reconnect with Ed. And in the meanwhile, we're going to go do two commercial sponsors. Just two. So stick around. We will be right back.
Brace yourself. DraftKings.com is delivering a haymaker to the world of fantasy sports, introducing Daily Fantasy MMA at DraftKings.com. DraftKings is America's favorite daily fantasy sports site where you could win enormous cash prizes every time you play. It's easy. Just pick five fighters, stay under the salary cap, and you could be on your way to a serious payday. Score points for significant strikes, advances, takedowns, reversals, and sweeps, and of course, knockdowns. Gain bonus points based on which round your fighter ends their bouts. These are the biggest fantasy daily contests for mixed martial arts ever, and they're at DraftKings.com. Don't miss out. DraftKings.com awarded over $300 million last year. How much of that did you win? Hurry to DraftKings.com and use promo code CHAIL to play Daily Fantasy MMA for free this weekend during UFC 184. You could win your slice of $1 billion in prizes being awarded this year. Enter CHAIL to play for free right now at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.
From the Oscar-winning screenwriter of 12 Years a Slave comes television's most extraordinary new dramatic series. Starting Thursday, March 5th, watch American Crime live at 10, 9 Central on ABC. Then tune into the American Crime podcast hosted by me, Elvis Mitchell. Each week we'll have a candid conversation with show creator John Ridley, plus show talent, character storylines, and more. Go to podcastone.com/American Crime to subscribe now.
Now, back to your welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Here's Chael Sonnen.
All right, we are reconnected with Ed O'Neill. Oh. Ed, when we cut out there, I was telling you that my dad insists, if you sent the four horsemen, Hearns, Hagler, Duran, and Leonard, if you sent them into an alley, no referee, no rules, and only one guy walks out, he insists that it's Roberto Duran. Is my dad right?
He's right.
He is, isn't he? Roberto Duran would beat them all in a street fight, wouldn't he?
There's no question about it.
Yeah,
there's
I love it.
You just say the same thing about Jake LaMotta.
Oh, yeah.
You put LaMotta in an alley, and, you know, he's coming out.
I think that's
right. You couldn't hurt him with a ball bat.
Now, have you ever had to use jiu-jitsu? Because I read a piece somewhere that you had to choke someone out in the streets. What was that story?
I did once. I was with a friend of mine, an actor named Bate Vitale, and we were having a couple of beers at O'Brien's pub on 23rd and Wilshire, and we were talking to a couple of gals, and we came outside, they closed, and we were sort of saying goodnight, you know, on the corner there, and this tall, big guy walked by, and he asked if they were closed, and my friend said, yeah, they just closed, but there's a bar right down the street that stays open 15 minutes later. He's being very nice, And the guy says, "Don't tell me where to drink, Shorty." And I looked at the guy and I said, "Hey, pal, you know, just move along. We don't want any problems. We're going home. You know, we're just enjoying our evening." And he said something else smart. You know how that is.
Sure.
And so now my friend Dayton, who's from Brooklyn.
I've been on both sides of that. I've been the smart aleck and the other guy.
We all have. And the guy sort of came after Dayton because Dayton said something to him. And Dayton sort of backed out into Wilshire Boulevard at the time, though it was so late there was no traffic. And the guy was throwing a couple of punches at him. And I walked up behind him. So this was not the most courageous thing in the world.
But you're honest about it. You're honest.
I hooked him with my right arm, you know, under the chin, and I yanked him backwards. I put the knee in his back, and I just hopped backwards a little bit so that he couldn't get his balance. You know what I mean? I was pulling him, and I just put the rear naked choke on him and choked him out.
I think that's beautiful. I think that's the best.
I
think that's the best way to do
it. Worked, you know. You know, once it's under the chin, you know.
Yeah, and I'll tell you.
And here's the other funny thing. My arms were sore for 3 days. You know, I must have squeezed so hard, you know, because my adrenaline was rushing.
It's an adrenaline thing, yep.
Yeah. But the poor guy, you know, he just went out like a light, you know. And so that was, that was the one time I used it one other time, too, but it was just I was with my wife, and I pulled guard on a guy and held him until they just broke it up.
Now, Halleck Gracie and I have become pretty close over the last 7, 8, 9, 10 months, and he did in the Metamorphs I competed in. He promoted this deal called a secret match. He told nobody what it was, so all of us were left to speculate, which was actually a lot of fun. But I had some inside sources, so I thought I had the secret match figured out, and I thought that it was either you versus CM Punk or it was you versus Joe Rogan, which is what my buddy Reese told me.
That was a rumor, and I don't know where that started, but I heard about it like after the fact.
Okay. Now, have you ever worked out with Punk? Because I know he's also Gracie trained.
No, I never have. I never met him.
And you know the other rumor is that you had offered to fight him in the UFC. Was that sincere, or was that elbow, wink, wink?
That wasn't even on the. I never even knew what happened. I never even mentioned his name. Somebody told me that was said. It never was.
Oh.
No, it never was. And Joe Rogan and I have been friends. You know, I mean, I don't hang out with Joe, but I know him. You know, I'm cordial with him. I never, you know, we never talked about rolling or anything like that.
Okay. All right. Well, doggone it. I thought we could get something going here. I thought this
no,
was going.
No. You know, and by the way, Chael, I'm 68 years old. I mean, you're trying to get me killed.
No, man, you're 68 years young. It's not how many miles the car has. It's how many miles the car has left.
I know, man. I'm trying.
And even,
hey, by the way,
yeah.
Hey, I'm down like pretty much to my fighting weight. And now I don't want to fight, but I'm down pretty good. I've probably lost about 20 since I've seen you. You know, I've been eating better and you know, training.
It sounds easy, but it's hard to lose weight. Eating better, just that,
God,
requires discipline,
me,
particularly
like,
on a set.
I like everything about it, you know.
Now, Halleck,
so listen, what about you? Are you finished fighting, or are you still toying with the idea, or?
You know, for right now, I'm done. I retired, and I got suspended after that. I set a record for the amount of banned substances they had in my system. And it was a little bit confusing. Like, they called me up, Ed, and they said, "Hey, Chael, your test was positive." I'm like, "Well, that's great." And they said, "No, positive is bad," which is a little bit confusing in those terms.
Yeah.
But at any rate, no, I'm out. And speaking of that, you know, right here as you and I are talking, a headline just came across my phone. My producer, Ben, is holding it up and showing it to me. But Anderson Silva...
Right.
Tested positive another time. A second test has come in for.
I read that was coming.
Yeah, I read it was coming too, but you know, again, I read that you were taking on Joe Rogan, so I'm pretty easy to fool. But this one's official.
I know what you mean, but boy, what a that kind of a shock, you know. But not so much. Maybe he felt he needed to heal. You know, you don't know what's going through these guys, and you know what? It's so crazy, Chael. Today, look, you look at a pro football team, you know that the three quarters of those guys are using performance-enhancing drugs.
For sure. They need to.
What they say, And unless they can stop it, which they can't seem to do, guys are going to do it because they're going to say, hey, I have to protect myself against the son of a bitch I'm looking at across that cage who I know goddamn good and well is using it. And I don't want to, you know, I got to match up with this guy.
Yep.
I mean, it's a self-preservation thing. I don't blame these guys. If they can't stop it, then, you know, hey, you know what I mean? I don't know. I don't advocate it, but at the same time, I can certainly understand a fighter's position who's got to go in there and fight guys who are on it. You know, it doesn't do him any good at the end of the day if he gets hurt. And then what's the commission going to do? Oh, we're sorry.
Yeah.
That doesn't help your kids.
You know, and Ed, I can tell you, you know, the psychology of a user, you know, right here from the horse's mouth, that's what it is. And, you know,
sure.
we don't want to do these things, but at the same time, man, I don't want to run 3 miles every morning either. But when I find out the competition is, you got
to
do it. Now, this is
what you have to do to succeed in what it is you're trying to do.
That's it right there. And tell me if I'm right, but I'll bet when you were in college, not only did you not use, I'll bet you were never even tempted. I can tell you I wasn't in college because nobody else was.
You have to understand how old I am. There was no such thing when I was in college.
Yeah, that kind of came out in the late 70s and 80s.
What's up, hon? Okay, fine. There was Benzedrine, which I never used because somebody told me you could die from it, you know, which I guess you could. But I never did that. But some of the guys would pop what they called bennies to hype them up in hot weather, which is very dangerous.
Sure.
They would do it to get more, you know, more of a pump, you know?
Yeah, and the NFL is interesting, Ed, because here's why. In the UFC, everything comes back on Dana and the leadership. And in the NFL, they've got a buffer. They've got a fake buffer known as the union. So the union and the NFL offices work hand in hand together, and anytime there's a pushback on the growth hormone and the things being used in the NFL can quickly, from a PR standpoint, come out and go, yeah, we hate it too, we really want to test them, and then secretly they make a phone call 10 minutes later and they tell the union, hey, we're going to try to push this through the media, so make sure you guys block it. I mean, they're all
That's
in
right.
bed together. And in the UFC, there's no buffer, so everything comes back on our leadership, and our leadership hates it. They're disgusted with the fact that guys are using. They're spending all sorts of money to clean it up, but from a PR standpoint, it all blows back on them, and it's really not fair, man. We're adults. I'm a consenting adult. I made a decision, and other guys did the same thing I did, and it wasn't the UFC's fault. It was ours.
Well, you know, of course, but, you know, I mean, and listen, you can't look at the business is what it is. You know, the UFC is doing great. They're making tons of money. People love it. And they have to protect that brand. And there's going to be a lot of people that don't like this decision, that decision. But at the end of the day, you know, so far they're doing pretty good.
Yeah. And I got to tell me let's go back to Anderson. And I don't say this from a self-serving standpoint. I don't defend Anderson as like a guy's to defend my own positive test. However, if We don't know why he used. If he used it to cheat, well, intent matters. But let's just say if he used it purely to heal his leg, and he still had some leftover residue in his system, and you know maybe he thought it was. But if he did it to heal his leg, man, I give him a pass. He has an obligation to his family, to himself, to cure that leg, man. I've got a cousin. He's also my godfather, who's in a wheelchair. We would turn to anything, whether it was free market or black market. Even if we had to get it in the back of an alley, we would do it if we could help his situation. So I give Anderson, for now, I give him a pass. I want to hear him out.
Sure.
Am I wrong? No. Am I wrong to do that? Is this the mentality of a user? I'm trying to be objective here. But I think I am. Man, I want Anderson to have a good... This is my mortal enemy, Ed. And I still want the guy to have a good life. It doesn't have...
No,
I want to beat him in the ring, but I don't want him to have a poor life.
I think right now, though, the jury is out. He's denying even having ever used anything, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, that's correct. That's
a
mistake.
I mean, I think that if it was solely medicinal to heal, he should have come clean and said, look, man, guys, I broke my leg in half. You know, I had to have some help. I'm not a kid anymore. I'm what is he? Almost 40.
Yeah,
you know, and so he could have done that. I think, and people would have been sympathetic to him. But to come out and say, "Man, I'm clean. That's bullshit. That test is wrong." you know, I don't know. Then you're looking at like, well, I don't know, man. Those tests are very seldom wrong, you know, especially when they do it twice.
Yeah, that's the problem. And you know, it's the United States. There's all sorts of people that can test you. In this particular case, it was a company called USADA. And USADA answers to one person, and that is Senator John McCain. They have an endless budget, and they will go to no length to maintain their credibility. And if somebody tries to say they got it wrong, they will go into action with endless resources to prove perjury. And my point is, yes, Anderson did make that statement. I think he made it in shock. He made the statement about 12 or 13 hours after the test.
It's like Bill Clinton said, nothing happened with the, you know, I never had sex with, you know, Monica Lewinsky. Well, you know, his wife was listening, you know, when they asked him the question.
Right.
You know, most guys are going to say, no, I didn't.
Right.
You know, and probably, you're probably right. He was probably like in shock, and basically the first instinct is say, no, I wouldn't do that, you know?
Right. It is. And, you know, you can never expect somebody to tell the truth in a situation when, if you were in the same situation, you know, you would lie. We can't hold Anderson to that standard.
Before.
Sure. You know, let's let him come out. Let's let him talk about it. All right. I got to move on to a couple of things. And I appreciate your time here. I know you're on set. Anytime you got to give me the shake, go right ahead. But a couple of things I want to go through. You, college, party animal. That's the word on the street. Is that accurate?
Yeah, probably so. Yeah.
All right. So you weren't doing performance answers, but Jack Daniel's Black Label was
anything
in
else,
the diet.
Anything else was in the mix, yeah.
All right. Now, David, who played Bud Bundy. See, I got to go back to Married with Children.
David
and
Bundy,
some actors hate this. They go, oh, man, I've moved on. I've done. The Rock hates it. The Rock hates it when we still call him The Rock. Okay, thank you, because it's part of my life. You were a big part of my youth and growing up, and you were my dad's hero. He absolutely loves
Al
Bundy.
That.
So at any rate, David was recently caught on TMZ, and he didn't. He definitely left room for speculation. The reporter had said, look, I heard a rumor that they are planning to do a remake of Married with Children. And David left, he definitely left ground for speculation without confirming. What can you tell me about that, man? Have you been approached?
What that was, David had one of the producer's creators, Michael Moyer, write a pilot, spec pilot, about David's character, you know, having, you know, grown up and now is living in the old house with his ex-wife and a bunch of these bust-out friends of his. And Peggy and I had won the lottery. And we were living in Vegas.
Nice.
So that we would only be in the show, like, you know, we couldn't legally do the show because, you know, we're both doing other series. But we could make one appearance a season. So Sony liked the idea of Bud Bundy in the old house, you know, every now and then calling dad and mom for money and we blow him off, whatever the scenario would be. But the son of one of the producers of the show who died kind of put the kibosh on. He said no. He wanted so much money that he priced Sony out of it, and they dropped the project. So it's not. It does at this point. It's not going to happen.
Well, that's disappointing, man. Because that would really be cool.
Yeah. Well, we were on board. I said I'll do it, and Katie said she'd do it, and Christina said she'd do it. You know, for David, because we really like David a lot.
Sure. All right. Let's
now listen, Chael. I kind of have to go. I mean, you know, I'm actually back on set, and I'd love to talk to you longer, but maybe we can do it at another time.
No, you're
we'll
awesome, man.
Chapter two.
That's super cool that you called during your lunch break, buddy. I can't thank you enough. Go to work. Earn a living, man. It's tough out there in those streets.
Okay, Chael. Nice chatting with you.
I'll see you. Take care, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Wow, what a cool guest, man. Ed O'Neill. And it is. I've got a piece of paper in front of me. I take notes before each show, some things I want to cover with guests. On my piece of paper right now, all I have is in capital letters his name, Ed O'Neill, because I know I was going to call him Al Bundy. At some point, he was going to get called Al. That guy, as you just heard, is about the most down-to-earth celebrity you're ever going to meet. I wish you guys could have heard him when he called in before the show. My producer, Ben, answered. And he was just as nice as can be. He said, hey, this is Ed O'Neill. I'm calling in. I'm a guest today. I mean, he's always like that. He just is a regular dude. And he's from Youngstown, Ohio. And we didn't get a touch on this enough, but Youngstown is ever bit as corrupt. It is a vicious, it's a mob town. Ohio, you wouldn't think of that. It is. It's a mob town. There's corruption. One of my favorite politicians is from there. He's a Democrat. I'm a Republican. And he's still one of my favorites. And he served a number of years in prison, in office. They took him out of office and they put him in prison. And you've got to read the story on it. You got to go into it and look into it. It's a fascinating story. There's even a documentary that John Ciccatelli worked with that's just fascinating. And Ed O'Neill is in that documentary because he is from Youngstown. One thing I didn't get to completely finish with him was the talk on Anderson Silva. And I've got to reserve the right with you, my listeners, to change my opinion when I'm confronted with new evidence, and new evidence will be coming in. But I would ask, and I would remind you, this guy is my enemy. We had a match. Everything I ever wanted in life was on the line in this match, and he took it from me. He took it fair and square, but he took it. So I do want you to understand that I'm not the first guy to come out to Anderson's defense, but let's make sure we reserve judgment here. If, and this isn't if, we don't know. See, intent is everything for me. We all want to be judged on our intent, but we judge others on their actions. And it's important that we wait and we see what his intent was. If his intent was to heal his leg, he gets a pass. He's 40 years old. He's always been a straight shooter. Take it or leave it, but he's never lied. He's got great credibility. If he comes out and says, man, I was trying to heal my leg, as human beings, and let's make sure we're human beings first before we put the sport in there. This is a father of five. This is just a regular guy, whether he reached superstar status or not. This is just a regular guy. Spends his life in the gym and gets put on TV a little bit and goes out and does his thing. But we want him to have a good life. If he's trying to heal a leg that was broken in two, let's make sure we give him consideration of that. If he comes out, maybe he goes the other way. Maybe he just tells us the exact opposite. He says, you know what? Couldn't do the sport anymore. Got scared. Tried to sneak something under the radar. If he says that, I think we listen, and you know he's going to be punished either way. But we need to keep it in perspective. We're not talking about murder here, guys. We're talking about a guy that took things to make himself feel better. It's against the rules. It's not okay. But let's make sure we keep it in perspective too. He is a human being first, and we certainly want humans to heal themselves. So this thing's going to play out. That's about all I got. It is Wednesday. I hope you're Wednesday. Oh, let me leave you guys with one more thought. 50 Shades of Grey. Garbage. I got drugged to this on Valentine's Day. This set a box office record. I can assure you it will plummet and be out of the theaters in no time. This is a disaster of a movie. People will try to talk to you on an intellectual level about film and art. They'll try to do this with songs and pictures and movies and everything else. And they'll talk about the cinematography value and the dialogue value and the directing. There's no value that matters in a movie besides entertainment value. That's it. And if you try to pretend it's something else to put yourself over as some kind of an artistic intellect, you are a fool. The only thing that matters was, is it fun or was it not to watch? And this movie was an absolute bust. And some people will even argue that it is somehow a sexy movie. It's not. It's definitely not. Okay, spoiler alert. The girl doesn't want anything the guy's doing to her, and he's doing vicious and terrible things while she is in tears and heartbroken. There is nothing enjoyable about that. And the people that like this, you know, I don't like snakes. And I don't like snakes to the point that if you own a snake, if you've got some 8-foot anaconda in your house, now I don't like you. Now I think you're a weirdo. Not only do I think the snake's weird, but the fact that you have one just made you weird. And the same thing goes with 50 Shades of Grey. I hope this thing is a complete bust because it ruined 2 hours of my life to the point that I'm mad about it. And I want to make sure you guys don't make the same mistake. I am Chael Sonnen. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Thanks for listening. You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.